Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
This is Mark Hunter, the Sales Hunter, author of High Profit Prospecting, powerful strategies to find the best leads and drive breakthrough sales results. And you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, which was named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer in 2016. My goal for this podcast is to help you discover new ideas about what's actually working in modern marketing. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything discussed in this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. Today, we're joined by Mark Hunter, and we're going to talk about his new book, High Profit Prospecting, powerful strategies to find the best leads and drive breakthrough sales results. Mark Hunter, also known as The Sales Hunter, is an author, sales consultant, and high-energy keynote speaker. He helps companies and salespeople find and retain better customers and maximize profits. He's also the author of the best-selling book, High Profit Selling, Win the Sale Without Compromising on Price. Mark has been recognized as one of the top 50 most influential sales and marketing leaders, and he is frequently quoted in the media and is a keynote speaker at major conferences on the subject of sales and sales leadership. His sales techniques are in use today by salespeople in more than 100 different countries, which might explain why he travels globally nearly 230 days per year. Before becoming the Sales Hunter, he spent 18 years in the sales and marketing divisions of three Fortune 100 companies. And when he was in college, he was a disc jockey. Mark, congratulations on High Profit Prospecting, and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Hey, thank you so much. And I figured you'd throw that disc jockey thing in there somewhere. We won't delve into that world, though.
Right. Well, you were a disc jockey in college, and I must say, from having read your book, it sounded like you were a little bit of a discipline problem in college. Yes,
I was. Hey, you know what?
You wrote about it, so I guess I'm free to talk about it.
Well, you are free to write about it. See, my whole career was supposed to be in advertising. I wanted to be an advertising person, and I got into sales only because of the Seattle Police Department. They were very courteous to me. They gave me 3 speeding tickets in the last semester of my last year of school, which meant about 3 months later, I couldn't afford car insurance, which then altered my career. And I either had to choose bread truck driver, taxi cab driver, or salesperson with a car. I chose the latter. It was the safest route.
Okay, so necessity was the mother of invention.
You got it. Thank you, Seattle Police Department. And you know what? It's worked out very well.
I think so. So now I have to ask, is Mark Hunter your real name? Or is that like a stage name? Because as a sales expert, the name Hunter just seems like something that a fiction writer would come up with.
Well, Poindexter just went. No, actually, Hunter is my real name. I owe it to my father. And when I went into this business, you know, you had to use it. So, hey, we did a lot of active market research. We Googled and saw that thesaleshunter.com was available. So guess what? That's the name of the company.
There you go. But it's almost like a CFO calling themselves a profit or something like that. So now, just for the listener's benefit, this is not the retired NHL player, Mark Hunter, and it's not the heavy metal singer, Mark Hunter.
Or the member of parliament in the UK, right? Mark Hunter is a very common name, yeah.
Okay. Didn't know about that one. But a lot of listeners in the UK, so I'm sure they appreciate that. Now, this book of yours, the foreword was written by Jeb Blunt, who is the author most recently of Fanatical Prospecting, and he's been on the Marketing Book Podcast. And the introduction was written by Mike Weinberg, who wrote New Sales Simplified and also Sales Management Simplified. So having said that, you are actually required by law to be on the Marketing Book Podcast, Mark.
That is why I had those people, because I knew. I mean, you know, when you get the law on your side, like I said, I had the Seattle Police Department on my side once. Now I have the law of authorship on my side.
That's right. That's right. Well, both of those, their interviews were some of the most popular ones we've ever had. And as a matter of fact, not to throw a challenge out there to you, Mark, but Mike Weinberg's interview is the most downloaded episode ever. So, you know, he's very competitive, like all of you sales guys. So
no pressure there, but I will determine to make sure that we beat him. So we will.
Oh, okay.
And I'll be talking to him here in just a couple hours. So I will convey that challenge.
Oh, excellent. I love it. So I have to give a little bit of a disclaimer here for the listener. This is the Marketing Book Podcast, but I honestly feel like I cannot have enough books about sales on the show, because it seems to me that now, even more than in the past, the more marketers understand about sales, the more effective they're going to be and the more successful they're going to be. Now, having said that, what is prospecting?
Well, prospecting, and let's break this apart, because marketing and sales do have a role in here. I call prospecting is identifying the lead and taking the lead and qualifying the lead. Marketing's role is really just to uncover the lead. The only thing we can ask them to do is to create awareness and hopefully generate leads. But it's the sales role to really prospect. And what we mean by prospect is, okay, they're going to still help develop leads too. They're going to generate lead, but they take that lead and they really put it through their process to determine whether or not this is a valid lead.
Mm-hmm. Well, you should also, I think, clarify what seems to be a misperception out there for some companies. Let's say there's some companies that have some fantastic lead generation going on. They've got a great marketing pipeline. The salespeople there still need to be prospecting on their own. Is that right?
Thank you for saying that, because this is a real problem. A lot of salespeople say, we don't need to prospect. Our marketing department's so great, they do. But you know what? One day, something's going to happen, and marketing is not going to be able to develop those leads, either due to a change in the competitive landscape or something. All salespeople must be devoting at least 10% of their time to prospecting. That is a fundamental. Why? Because it also keeps them sharp in the art of selling. And because if you can't prospect, you can't close a deal.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain the situation you describe in your book where management is wrong but thinks they're right, where they thought marketing was doing great, but actually the industry might have been hot, or as a result, the salespeople never really learned how to do what you're describing?
Well, yeah, this happens a lot. You know, what happens is there's just a level of business that's just out there. You don't even have to really breathe and the business comes to you. But marketing has got this great campaign out there. They got this great campaign. So these leads are coming in. So what happens is marketing thinks, oh, we're so great. We're so good. Our marketing dollars are so efficient and so effective. Bullpucky. Those marketing dollars, really, they can be as incredibly ineffective. It's just that there's business out there in the marketplace. So what happens is then the marketplace changes. And suddenly all these marketing dollars, whoa, they're not working. And we throw the baby out with the bathwater. And what happens here is sales gets thrown under the bus and marketing gets thrown under the bus, when really neither of them were the contributor to it, although they both did contribute to it, because sales forgot to prospect and marketing really failed to measure accurately the effectiveness of their spend.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, success has 1,000 fathers until their industry changes.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, whenever sales is great, sales will always say it's we're doing such a great job. Whenever sales is bad, sales is quick to blame marketing. Gee, isn't that amazing?
Can you describe the evolution of prospecting over the last 25 or so years?
Yeah, you know, really, prospecting, and I talk about it in my book. At one point in my sales career, I could pick up the phone and boom, one call, I could get an appointment and I could go in and I could close the sale. Now, because of the level of information that's available out there on the internet, the customer is more empowered than ever to be able to get whatever they want. Now, we all know that, but what does that mean? That means we have to shift and change how we go out and prospect. That's why I write in the book, I've got a couple chapters in there on social media, because one of the big things you're doing about social media is creating a platform. You know, I don't know about you, but you probably put some clothes on before you went to work. I did too. I put some clothes on. Our clothes are really our social media profile. And what we do out there on the internet, the presence, because nobody talks to a salesperson without first Googling them. I happen to notice that about an hour or so ago, you went out onto my LinkedIn profile. You looked at my LinkedIn profile. Why did you do that? Because you wanted to get more background information as to who you're going to talk with. Our prospects, our customers, everyone is doing that continuously, checking everybody out.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the myths that are out there about finding new customers? I mean, it seems like you must run into this every day.
Oh, there are so many myths out there. Well, if we just put out great content out on the web, we will get all the inbound leads we want. Mm. Liar, liar. Bad salespeople have shoeless kids. Bad marketing people have shoeless kids. No, it's not about, you can't just keep throwing content out there. There's another great, great myth that says, well, you know, if we just take care of all of our existing customers, we'll have all the business we want. And I'm going to go on a rant here.
And they'll give you referrals you didn't even ask for, right?
And they'll give you so many referrals. I don't have time to prospect. I got to take care of my customer. Oh, come on, people, get real. Mm-hmm. This one drives me nuts.
Or you must, like we were just talking about, you must have some say, look, Mr. Sales Guy, we have done pretty well to this point without having a prospect.
Everybody's so proud of us. We are so good that we've never had to prospect. Oh, liar, liar, pants on fire. Mm-hmm. Unless you're giving away what you got or something like that, you've had to prospect. And oh, by the way, maybe you are one of those lucky organizations that haven't had to prospect. And I know a lot, I get called into a lot of those companies. But again, what happens is the competition catches up, the marketplace changes, something changes. And suddenly what happens is those customers that were just flocking to you are no longer flocking to you. And suddenly you look at, we're in trouble. This is why I fundamentally believe everybody in sales must be spending 10% of their time prospecting. Because I don't want to put that burden 100% on marketing. And marketing can't allow that to be all put on them. Because what happens is, you know, ultimately, sales has got to be involved. So the sooner I have sales involved, the sooner they can understand really what is happening. How is this working? One of the examples I talk about in the book is we get into the situation where we can't close a deal. We can't close a deal without discounting. Oh, we got a discount. My argument to that is the reason is because you're probably trying to take a Walmart shopper and turn them into a Nordstrom customer. Mm-hmm. I can't do it. See, what happened is you started off with bad prospects. And sales is going to understand that before marketing does. That's not to discount marketing, but because sales takes that customer through the sales funnel, they're going to understand that better. That's why I say it's so important that sales and marketing be linked on the whole lead generation prospecting process.
Mm-hmm. Can you, related to that, can you explain the difference between tactical buyers and economic buyers?
Oh, there's not a whole lot of difference, because to a certain degree, an economic buyer is also a tactical buyer. But let me bring it apart. A tactical buyer is simply looking for a solution that I need right now. It's got to fit this time frame, this criteria. It's a bid type of process. The economic buyer adds in there the criteria of we've got to have X amount of dollars, you know, or, you know, we only have X amount of dollars. It has to deliver X, X, X. So the tactical and the economic buyer are the two that we're going to get beat up the most on price. And that's why I talk about in the book, from a prospecting standpoint, I got to be looking for the strategic buyer. I got to be looking for that strategic lead, that strategic prospect. Because when I find them, I have a greater ability to create a better outcome for the customer and greater profit for me. And let's not kid ourselves. Profit's a good word. because it allows it is. I mean, profit. Hey, I wrote the first book was high profit selling because, I mean, you know, it's high profit prospecting. If I prospect with high potential prospects, I have a greater opportunity to grow my business. What does that allow me to do? It allows me to A, stay in business. It allows me to reinvest in the business. It allows me to become better at my craft. What does it do for the customer? They're not going to pay me unless they achieve a higher outcome. Because remember, nobody buys anything. They only invest. So if they're willing to invest, ooh, you know what? A higher price, that means they're looking for a bigger outcome. Both sides win. Profit is not a dirty word.
Amen. And related to the issue of the economic versus the tactical buyer, something that as a business owner, this jumped off the out of the book at me, and that's when you said, if the prospect is not willing to share with you their strategic issues, then you are not at the right level of the organization.
Right. Think about that for a moment. You're talking to a prospect, and all they want to do is talk dates. All they want to do is talk money and so forth. This is why the worst type of prospect you can have, the worst type of lead, is somebody who calls you up and says, "Hey, I just need a quick price quote." Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll give you a quick price quote. No. Any salesperson who lets a price go out the door without first understanding the strategic needs of the customer and what are the outcomes that they're looking for, and has really come to understand that, should be terminated. I don't want the quick price quote is all that is a custom. All that is a stupid customer. Ooh, did I put the word stupid in front of customer? I did, because they're not a customer. They're a non-entity. All they're doing is looking for a price to validate a decision they already made to buy from somebody else.
Yes.
So guess what? You just showed up at the party again. And guess what? You're not getting anything to drink.
Right. And related to that, at the very end of the book, again, one of my favorite parts is there is a section entitled "Never Become Mesmerized by the Lead Who Claims They Want to Do Business with You Right Now." And
that's right.
You state that and the reason I like this is because it really brought back some bad memories for me as a business owner. And you said the urgent inbound phone call is almost always a bad dream about to play out in real life.
Right. It is. Oh. Because what they've probably have already made their decision, but their boss has said, "Oh, you got to get a couple more quotes, or you got to go get this," or something like that. And okay, now there can always be exceptions to the rule, and there's exceptions to the industry. If you sell some sort of a gasket that keeps a machine running, and the machine shop calls and they say, "Hey, our machine stopped and we need a gasket right now." I get that. That's a deviation to it. But the vast majority of the time, let's not kid ourselves, that quick phone call is going nowhere.
Yeah, and the reason I guess it hurt is because I thought I immediately it flashed before my eyes every episode where that's happened. I thought,
hey, it's happened.
Mark
it's happened
has
to me.
Nailed me on that.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah. I mean, we've all fallen victim to that. We've all, you know, it's slow, pipeline's not very full, and you get that phone call and you go, "Ooh," and man, you just start jumping around. You think this, you know, no, shut up. And this is where many times, you know, think about this. We have a lot of very smart potential customers out there, and they know how to play us. They know how to play the salesperson, and they'll call, they'll get that quick quote. And oh, guess what? If you were to give that quick quote, that'll never be the price you sell it at. Because guess what? That's where the negotiations now begin.
Yep.
See, then they're going to negotiate you down from there. See, you lose.
Mark, you've worked in marketing in the past. What are some of the biggest mistakes marketers are making as it relates to sales?
Well, marketing people get caught up with the shiny object just as much as salespeople, and I did time in marketing, and we
said like it was a jail sentence.
No, it wasn't a jail sentence, but believe me, at times it was, because we overthink the sentencing, we overthink the sentence structure or the color, we overthink the placement of this ad and so forth. And come on, people, relax. Nothing we do here today is going to change the course of mankind tomorrow. You know, I mean, we overthink our messaging. We overthink our strategy. Now, I'm all in favor of testing. I'm all in favor of whatever form of testing you do, whether it be A-B testing, whether it be focus groups, you know, whatever. But I'll tell you what, at the end of the day, many times it's your own gut. It's your own gut that's going to tell you whether or not what we're doing makes sense. And the other thing is, Mark, and I tell this to marketing people, don't be so married to your concept, to your idea. Because again, I've sat through a lot of advertising pitches, you know, a lot of agency pitches. And I love agency people. I have a lot of good friends in the agency business. But they'll come in and they'll do this whole 30, 45 minute setup before they share with you the campaign. Last I heard, I don't think the customer was getting that same 30 or 45 minute setup before they saw the campaign. They just saw the campaign. See, this is one of those things that we get a little bit, suck each other's exhaust a little bit too much, and it hurts.
What would you urge marketing people to do these days to better inform themselves about sales, like go on a sales call?
Well, get out on a sales. I tell you what, marketing people. Okay, we don't have any outside salespeople. Listen in on the phone. Listen in on the phone. Get involved with your salespeople. Go out on sales calls. Now, going out on sales calls is not something to fear. What you're doing is you're going out on a mission. You're going out on a mission to learn and to understand. But here's a little note of advice to marketing people. And again, I've been on both sides of the fence. When you are going out with a salesperson, you're going out on a call. What you're doing is you're going out to listen. Don't sit there and try to jump in. Don't sit there and try to critique. Remember, what you are seeing is just a couple of sales calls. What you're listening to is only a couple telephone calls. And don't sit there and think just because you spent one day in the field, you made five sales calls, that suddenly you're a sales expert. You just saw a window. I watched too many marketing people, you know, participate in one or two sales calls, and they think they know everything. And it's the same thing with salespeople. I encourage salespeople, sit in on some of the marketing meetings. But don't think that just because you sit in on one meeting, you know how marketing operates. You don't. Both are very complex businesses. Both serve very critical purposes. And the sooner both respect each other for the talents they can bring, the world will be in a better state. And then we'll sing Kumbaya and hold hands.
Well, we'll get closer than where we are now. And I think there's a gravitational
pull
that is forcing them to work closer together because the way people buy is changing.
Right, right. And they buy through different channels. See, this is the whole thing. Many times a sales organization is structured by channel, but marketing is dealing with all the channels. See, so again, this is where sales gets into trouble. They think they know everything, but they're only selling in one channel. Marketing is touching all channels.
So, Mark, let's just get a little bit further into the sales and the prospecting, though. How does a salesperson know if they are prospecting or wasting their time, and there is a big difference?
Well, there is a big difference. First of all, you're not prospecting until you've engaged the prospect, okay? So, dinking around on the internet, gathering information, putting stuff into your CRM system, doing all this emotionally, no, waste of work, is not prospecting. That's not. You are only prospecting when you're actively engaged with the customer. What that means is I've got them on the telephone. Now, okay, I'm going to go on another rant here. It's amazing. The telephone still does work, okay? Let's get over it. Let's get over this whole idea that, well, nobody calls. Well, you know, or nobody answers the phone. You know what I found, though? I can do a very effective job prospecting. I may not get you on the phone, but I can leave you an 11 to 14 second voicemail message.
Yes.
Now think about that from 11 to 14 seconds.
And explain why it should be so short, Mark.
Well, because what you're doing is you're respecting the other person's time. The reason salespeople have a bad rap out there is because we have done stupid stuff. What I want to do is I want to leave you a great 11 to 14 second voicemail message. Hey, Ross, Mark Hunter calling. I want to just get you some information regarding an update on X. Ross, give me a buzz, 402-598-6194. Again, Mark Hunter, 402-598-6194. Boom. That's it. That was probably like, 13, 14. Now.
Okay, but does anybody listen to voicemail?
Well, yes. Surprisingly enough, they do. Now
I listen to everyone I get.
Yeah. So, now, there's a lot of people that don't. Okay? Now, I get that. Okay?
All right.
But no medium is perfect. No medium is perfect. Mm-hmm. There are people who still advertise on television. Everybody doesn't watch television, but some people do. Not everybody reads the newspaper, but there are still people who advertise in the newspaper. So what I want to do is I'm going to prospect by reaching you at different mediums. And when I mean different mediums, I may reach you by way of a voicemail message. I may reach you by way of an email. I may reach you by way of a LinkedIn message. I may reach you by any number of different ways. And it's going to be kind of a variety there, because one of those means is ultimately going to break through. Now, I got to go on a little, I got to share one quick thing. Think about a phone call you make. A phone call can only go one of three ways. That's it. Only one of three ways. One, the person you're trying to reach answers the phone. Great. Two, a gatekeeper of one type or another answers the phone. Or three, it goes to voicemail. That's really it. That's it. Each one of those three, though, is distinctly different. And too many times salespeople, when they're making prospecting calls, aren't prepared because each one is different. I'm going to ask a gatekeeper probably a different set of questions than I'm going to ask the actual person. The voicemail message, I've got to have very tight and concise. See, I've got to be ready for that call to go any one of those three ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What is the biggest mistake people make in leaving a voicemail message?
Well, the biggest mistake is they drone on and on and on. And then they say, I'll send you an email, or I'm following up on the email I just sent you, or did you get the thing? Oh, that is so stupid.
And the value to the listener is?
Is zero. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah, it's zero. It's stupid. You can't, because, hey, look, I get these all the time. I get voicemail messages. Did you get the email I sent you? Yes, I got the email, and it was stupid. I chose not to respond. Okay, so don't sit there and now send me a stupid voicemail. Dumb.
Yeah. You mentioned gatekeepers. How are salespeople failing when it comes to gatekeepers?
Well, you have to. Yeah. You have to respect the gatekeeper as the decision maker. Because again, now there's all kinds of different. The gatekeeper at one place may be just the person who's working the switchboard. The gatekeeper at another place might be the administrative assistant. The gatekeeper may be another department person who just happened to answer the phone. So again, I've got to be prepared. And this is one of the first reasons why I will say is, hey, I'm Mark Hunter. And, who are you? Now, I'm not going to say who are you in terms of that, but I'm going to allow my personality to come through. Here's what I found, something very interesting with gatekeepers. Gatekeepers in particular, now if you think about it, if you were charged with answering the phone, oh man, would that be painful all day just to answer the phone? If you get a phone call and the person is warm and engaging and has a personality, you're going to be far more courteous to them. You're going to listen to them. You're going to respect them. I always allow my personality to come through just that much more when I'm talking to the gatekeeper, because what I'm looking for is I may be saying, hey, I'm looking for, maybe I don't even know who it is. I'm looking for the person who is in charge of X. And what you're going to say, this is really critical. Oh, that's good. Why don't you give me their phone number? And then you're going to add, and because you want to be able to call them direct next time. Then you say, oh, would you mind connecting me? I always want to ask for that phone number first, to write that down, to record that, and then say, oh, would you connect with me? Now, when I connect with you, what happens is now I have the ability to be able to call you directly, and I'm much more amenable. Now, let me back up, though, for one little piece here. If I sit here and have you connect me, you're the gatekeeper. You know what's going to be very interesting? It's coming through an inside line. I remember when I was in corporate America, I would always answer an inside call. Outside calls, screw it. That was a salesperson. I didn't want to talk to them. Mm-hmm. So I ignored them. I would always ignore them. So that's why you want. Get the phone number, but then ask them to connect you.
Right. So the telephone still works. My sense is that it's an even better time to be using the phone because so many people think it doesn't work.
That is so true. I mean, really, if you think about it, the number of unsolicited vendor calls that the typical person receives is far less today than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. So guess what? I've always said a 2-watt light bulb looks pretty good in a dark room. So right. I'm gonna call away.
Yeah, and it's also, there's been this big move away from printed material for marketing. And many are arguing this may be the best time ever to start using print.
It is. It is.
Depending upon what you're selling and so forth.
Well, I mean, I tell you what, oversized postcards. Now, this is a challenge because depending on the market and depending on whether or not you're B2B or B2C, because the real estate industry really jumps on postcards in some markets. Mm-hmm. But I've been amazed at the impact that an oversized postcard can have. With this whole book launch I'm doing, we have oversized postcards that are going out to people. And we think we're going to get a very high, very high response.
I bet you will. And there's, of course, more that goes into it than just printing. There's all kinds of other things. But let's talk – so we talked about the phone. Let's talk about social media. What are the value and I guess you could say the extreme pitfalls of social media for prospecting?
The extreme pitfalls is cat videos, okay? Let's just get that on the table right now. No. Here's the challenge.
Well, I'm sorry, but I can't stop watching them.
I know. That's the problem. Here's the deal. When you are on social media, first of all, you never use your selling time to be on social media, okay? Social media is an activity you do in the evening or so forth. Now, there are times you're going to be communicating with people directly by way of social media. I get that. But what I'm talking about, this is the updates and so forth. Here's a couple things. A, you must allocate your time. If you say, I'm going to spend 15 minutes on social media, you spend 15 minutes, that's it. And you know what's interesting? Social media, if all you do is go out there and look at stuff, how do people know if you've been on social media? I encourage, and let's talk about B2B right now. One of the things I really encourage people in B2B to do is to go take a news site. Find an article of interest to your industry or your interest. I like leadership, for instance. I might find an article on leadership, and I read it real quick. And then what I do is I link it. I put it out on my LinkedIn profile. I push down on LinkedIn, and I'll just add a comment. Hey, look at the second paragraph. Great point the author brings. Just two quick sentences. Now, here's why I like doing this. A, it now allows people, as they look at my profile, they begin to see, oh, this is what Mark's all about. This is what Mark's all about. You know, we talked earlier about, you know, your social media profile is like the clothes you wear. Mm-hmm. Same thing. This is updating the wardrobe that you're wearing. Because now what happens is people begin to see, ah, Mark Hunter's in this. Oh, Doug is really into this. Ah, I see. So that's something. And you could do that in 30 seconds. That's all it takes. Mm-hmm. But you must set defined boundaries. And I'll argue this. It's not the quantity of time you spend on social media. It's the quality of the time. And I think you can do it 15 to 20 minutes a day, period.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that in terms of using social media, most salespeople don't have a strategy.
Social media strategy. Yeah, those are a couple words that go together. Yeah.
Yeah, well, they should. What are the things that should go into developing a salesperson's social media strategy? And I would also argue that if you have a strategy, suddenly your time management becomes easier.
Well, it does. First of all, don't try to play on every platform. And okay, now if you're in B2C, this can be a little, if you're a B2C retail environment, you may have to play in everything because people can post negative stuff anywhere. But a typical salesperson, don't try to play on every platform. Only play on the platforms that are meaning to you. For instance, myself, we're B2B. We play in LinkedIn, we play in Facebook, and we play in Twitter. And each one of those have a uniquely different strategy. And it's got to be honed in because my LinkedIn, for instance, is 100% business. I don't do anything but business on it. And I make sure that every messaging I have links back to some sort of a call to action back to my website, mm-hmm. something. My Facebook is more of a personal. And I'm connected with clients. I'm connected with customers because I want them to know me personally and I want to know them personally. I don't put as much business stuff out there. Maybe it's about 30% business. And again, because that's a different strategy. Twitter is really all about very short, quick quotes. And I have a Twitter strategy that says, we automate. Oh, no. Yeah. You can automate Twitter. And this is, I'm going to go on one quick rant here. There are some purists out there in the social media world. There are some, all my tweets are me. I never automate anything. Well, that's like saying, you know what? I wrote this book, but you can only read it when I'm reading it. Oh, I'm going to read the book for the next 5 minutes. You can read my book. No, we publish a book so people can read our content whenever they're ready. We put up videos so people can watch them whenever they're ready. To say I don't automate Twitter, I'm sorry. That to me is a big mistake. I'm going to automate Twitter. But I know when my drive times are, to kind of coin a phrase from the media world. Mm-hmm. I know that between 6 and 9 a.m. Central Time where I live, that's my primary Twitter time. And again, a little more so in late afternoon, about, you know, 3 to about 7 p.m. Those are my drive times. That's when the bulk of my Twitter messages are going to be out there. If I'm trying to hit Europe or Australia, if I'm speaking there, which I do oftentimes, I then will, I'm not going to be up at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to load the system to be sending out messages at that time. Mm-hmm. You be specific to your audience.
Yeah, and your audience will like it, which I think is why automation can become pretty irrelevant quickly. So we've talked about phone, social media, but you mentioned that the number one question, a prospecting question you receive from salespeople is how to get people to open and respond to emails. When you get that question, what do you then ask them in response?
Well, I like to ask them, what's your subject line? Because think about this. The majority of emails are being previewed on a smart device. That means you're seeing the first, 60, 65 characters, maybe at most, of the subject line, and maybe the first 100 characters of the email itself. So guess what? If your title, hi, I'd like to introduce myself. Well, guess what? I really didn't want to meet you. Delete.
Boom. And they just became a victim of smartphone deletion frenzy. Is that right?
Because we delete emails far faster on our smartphone than we do. You know, why are we all so good at playing Pokemon? Why are we so good? Because we have learned how to delete messages rapidly while walking down the street on our smartphones. Right. I rest my case. It's all for a purpose, you know?
Well, do you find that salespeople are placing too much emphasis on email, particularly the guys that don't want to be using the phone?
Yes, because it's easy. I just sent out 1,000 emails. It's because they can't face rejection. Excuse me, but if you can't face rejection, get out of sales, okay? That's a tweetable moment, okay? Here's holding. We send out email. Just because we send out emails, don't kid ourselves. Don't go thinking for a moment that anybody's opening. I have a real thing. I really harp on this a lot. If I send you more than 2 or 3 emails over the course of a 4-week period, 4 or 5-week period, and you haven't responded to me, probably your spam filter is going to pick up my name as being spam. And guess what? Every message from there on goes into the spam filter. Mm-hmm. So don't think that, well, I've sent that person 18 emails. They surely should respond by now. Well, no, idiot. They only maybe saw the first 2 and deleted. Mm-hmm. This is why you got to change things up. Have to change things up.
And you talk about never send the same email twice.
Oh, thank you. It's like leaving the same voicemail twice. You never leave the same voice. Look, I'm going to assume everybody is more intelligent than me. So I'm never going to send them the same thing twice because all I'm doing is insulting them. Yeah. I saw that subject line. It was pathetic. Now, I may have similar content in the email, but my subject line is going to be different. My first 100 characters of the email. You see, we have to completely discard everything we've learned about writing from our middle school English teacher, high school journalism class, whatever. And we really have to completely flip it around. That first sentence, this really is, we got to think Twitter. We really have to write that first sentence. It has to be Twitter. I say a powerful email is going to consist of no more than 5 or 6 sentences, no more than 1 or 2 sentences per paragraph, double spaced, no more than 3 paragraphs. That's it. That's it. And no attachments. No attachments. Not even in your signature line. Why? Because not every smartphone may be as smart as yours. Mm-hmm. And who knows what it's going to do to it? Who knows what it's going to do to the image? I keep it very clean, plain text, period, period.
Yes. Mark, so you've had a career in sales. You've spoken to thousands of people. You've met probably an equal number of companies. Before we start to wrap up, I just want to ask, what are some of the things that the top performing salespeople do regularly?
Yeah, a couple things that top performing salespeople do. First of all, they are not in the least bit afraid of failing. In fact, they want to fail fast. You want to fail fast and learn faster. 2, plan today what you're going to do tomorrow. Top performing people know exactly who they're going to contact tomorrow before they leave work today. They plan those things out. The third thing they do is they don't allow themselves to hang out with low life people. You know, the easiest way to become a millionaire is to hang out with millionaires. You become who you associate with. What you want to do, top performing salespeople hang out with top performing salespeople. Mm-hmm. And in turn, it motivates each other. It drives everybody to a higher level.
Yeah, it reminds me of the expression, look at your friends and you'll see your future.
Oh, that's why my mother was so scared. Yeah, yeah.
What else?
Well, I mean, they never stop learning. I mean, they never, ever stop learning. Mm-hmm. High-performing salespeople say every day, there's going to be something I'm going to learn. And there's also going to be a way that I'm going to impact somebody else in a positive manner. They just have this outlook that everybody, it could be the barista at Starbucks. It could be the person at the convenience store. It could be somebody at Costco. They know their job is to help make sure everybody around them has a better day. Mm-hmm. And this isn't cheesy. No, this isn't cheesy. This is being a leader. This is leadership. I have a definition for sales leadership. Sales leadership is about helping others see and achieve what they didn't think was possible. Stop and think about that. See and achieve what they didn't think was possible. It doesn't matter who it is. It could be the customer. It could be the wait staff in the restaurant. It doesn't matter. Your goal is to help them have a better day. And when you do that, that changes your whole framework. That changes your whole mind. And as a result, have you ever noticed how calm people make better decisions? Yeah. Have you ever noticed how calm people listen better? Yeah. Have you ever noticed how calm people have a way to close deals that others can't? Yeah. It works.
Mark, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
The book. They got to buy the book. No, I'm sorry. That was a bad
always
joke.
Always a sales guy.
Hey, I'm never going to admit. Hey, pick it up in audio. Pick it up in Kindle. Pick it up in book form. Yeah. All 3 forms available. No, it really is to have a strategy. You must have a strategy. And always remember, the best prospecting people are going to use multiple mediums. They don't rely exclusively on email. They don't rely exclusively on the telephone. They use every medium out there to help them achieve a plan that works. Mm. And you tailor the plan based on the type of prospect. This means you may have 4 different types of customers that you actually prospect. That means you've got to have 4 different prospecting plans. Woo! Yeah, there's homework involved. Mm-hmm. But if you get to the top of the game, you'll do the homework.
Yeah, Mark, just one other thought I had though, but if you're a marketer and you are working at a company and there is no kind of prospecting that's being done, should that marketer be nervous?
Yes, be very nervous. Be very nervous because you know what that says? Sales is going to throw marketing under the bus as soon as something doesn't work right. Mm. And I've been in organizations like that. I had a VP of sales one time. He says, the reason we have marketing, so we have someone to blame. But you know what? I'm sure there are VPs of marketing who have that same expression. They just say, hey, the reason we have sales is so we have someone to blame.
Well, and I could see somebody working in marketing thinking, look, we're doing what we're supposed to do. But that's all good and well until the industry changes or something happens and they then are have the problem that is brought on by never having a prospecting
plan. That, you know, it's the same example as planning for war. You know, the war plan looks great until the first bullet's fired. Mm-hmm. Then it all goes to pieces.
Yeah.
And that's why both sides have to work together.
Yeah. Mark, what books have inspired your work and career?
Wow, what books? It's a long list. You know what? Peter Drucker, phenomenal. Anything from Peter Drucker, I thoroughly value. Jack Welch, some of his earlier books, I very much like. But I'll tell you what, there's a guy who's got a book out right now. Rory Vaden has a book out called Take the Stairs. Great book. And he really digs in that, you know, life is not for the easy. Life is not for the timid. And sometimes you just got to take the stairs. And but when you're willing to take the stairs, it's amazing what you can achieve because, you know, everybody else is on the elevator, stuck.
Jay Baer has talked about Rory Vaden when Jay's been on the show. Another book Rory wrote about, it was called Procrastinate on Purpose.
Procrastinate on Purpose. I haven't gotten around to buying it. I haven't gotten around buying it. So
I get it. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Well, are there any other recent or upcoming books that you recommend or looking forward to?
Well, there's a ton of new books that are coming out. Anthony Iannarino has got a great book coming out. Jeb Blunt, of course, the guy who wrote the foreword for the book, Fanatical Prospecting. If you're in a short sales cycle, and if you're in, whether it be sales or marketing, buy that book. I mean, it really is, I think, the ultimate manual. And of course, Mike Weinberg, New Sales Simplified. Mike and I have similar sales backgrounds in terms of the industry we've been in. And he and I have known each other for years. But that book is so spot on, New Sales Simplified. And do you want to buy the book and throw it in your boss's face and say, get it, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both are fantastic. And actually, Anthony is going to be on the show in October when his book comes out, The Only Sales Guide You'll Ever Need. And Jeb Blunt has his ninth book coming out in the spring of 2017.
He is a machine.
Oh, yeah. So, Mark, how best can listeners learn more about you and your book?
Well, the best way is to go out to the website, thesaleshunter.com. And you're going to see on there is a picture of the book. You can click the book and, hey, it takes you to a whole bunch of free stuff, free offers around the book. Got to grab it quick, though. Grab that stuff quick. But there's a ton of stuff out there on the website. It's got links to YouTube videos and whole host of different stuff. And but anyway, and hey, just go to Barnes & Noble or Amazon, whatever, and pick up a copy of High Profit Prospecting.
Wherever fine books are sold. And we'll have links to all that on the show notes for this episode at marketingbookpodcast.com. The name of the book is High Profit Prospecting, Powerful Strategies to Find the Best Leads and Drive Breakthrough Sales Results. The author is Mark Hunter. Mark, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you, and great selling.
And that closes the book on episode 89 of the Marketing Book Podcast. But please don't let the end of this episode be the end of what you can learn about modern marketing. Visit marketingbookpodcast.com for links to all the things we talked about in this interview and access to free marketing guides from my agency. And while there, make sure to sign up for the Marketing Book Podcast newsletter so you never miss an episode. Now, I know this probably sounds crazy, but I get so excited when I hear from listeners from around the world like you. If I can answer your question or help point you in the right direction to get the information you need, please don't hesitate to ask. Just go to marketingbookpodcast.com and leave me a message or connect with me on LinkedIn. My name again is Douglas Burdett, or send me a tweet at marketingbook. And please join us next time as we talk with Dr. Robert Cialdini about his new book, Persuasion, A Revolutionary Way to Influence and Persuade. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
You're right. I live right next door to Warren Buffett.
Do you really?
Well, the town is so small that everyone lives next door to Warren Buffett. Boom, 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 boom.
I'll be here all week Two shows on Saturday.
You got it. Work in the lounge, 7 to midnight.
Try the veal. So. And let's tip those hardworking waitresses.
They are working hard for you here tonight.
Yes, that's right.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.